You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Bloomberg Sports. We're going to hear from Grant Hill in just a few minutes. He's got a new book out. It's called Game. Speaking of game, let's talk about the state of pro basketball, Vanessa Perdomo. We've been looking at the NBA, the WNBA, two really interesting seasons, one finishing up, one underway. The NBA ratings are up, but
Right.
We're still trying to figure out what this season really means.
Right. We don't know what that really means yet, right? Ratings are up from 2021, but like in 2021, we were still dealing with the COVID protocols, still dealing with less fans at the games, still dealing with all of that. This is the first season where things are back on track. This is the first time they played in June since 2019, you know, the playoffs. So it's the you know, audience is there, obviously, and it's great to see the numbers go up. But what does it mean exactly as far as growth of the game overall in the last 10 years?
It feels like we're seeing a game on both sides that is in transition in many ways. You've got stars. Everybody loves LeBron, but LeBron probably only has, you know, 1, 2, maybe 3 more seasons left. That seems like an outside bet to think he's going to be around for that long. Steph Curry still going strong. But you do have this new generation of players coming up that's bringing some new energy. If you think historically about the NBA, it does go through these moments of inflection. Grant Hill, who we're going to hear from later on, he was part of one of those as well. I'm excited for the new stars, the Jaws and the Anthony Edwards, you know, to really sort of get their due and start to define their own league.
Right, because right now they're not thought of as the superstars of the league, but they really are already superstars when you consider how well they are at branding themselves, how big a fandom they really already have. And I think it's really exciting that there hasn't been a sort of, oh, here's the long baton throw to the next generation. Like, they're already there. They're already beating the superstars.
Yeah.
They're Jason Tatum and, you know, sweeping KD in the Nets, you know, so it's already there and it's really exciting. And I think that that's what the league was built on, right? The league was saved by Magic and Bird because of their stardom, because of their rivalry. So, and then again, saved by MJ and, like you said, Grant Hill in that era. So it's always about the superstars of the league. And I think there's always this worry, LeBron's going to leave eventually. You know, I mean, he can't play. He says he's going to play till whenever he's, you know, his son comes in the league or whenever he can, which I do believe he can, because even though he didn't make the playoffs this year, he's still playing great.
Sure.
Right. But, you know, at least there wasn't some sort of lull, because that's what the NBA doesn't want. Right.
Yeah.
You can't have that. And the great thing about the people you're talking about, Ja and Anthony Edwards, they're coming from small markets, right? They're in these small market teams that it's great to see that. And you see Giannis staying at Milwaukee, which is amazing. So it's not just the Lakers who are, you know, doing great things, or just the Warriors, you know? So that's the other exciting part of it.
And meanwhile, I feel like there's a lot of economic tumult to some extent, but also a lot of opportunity on the women's side. We were talking before we came on air about an interview Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner gave just a few weeks ago about potential expansion. The WNBA feels like it's at a critical moment. 25 years in, there's a lot of expectation that they're finally going to turn the corner.
Right.
Will they?
Like, finally about to get over that hump, but it's this weird hump that 25 years into NBA, they were, you know, about to be bankrupt. So they're actually doing great. You know, they have the $75 million of capital fundraising that they did this year. And it looks like they're right on the precipice of expanding the league, which is something that people have been wanting for a long time. You haven't had a new team since 2008 in the Atlanta Dream. So I think that it's going to happen. Will it? She said in that interview with The Athletic, could be as early as 2024, which would be perfect. You know, you have coming off such a big March Madness. People want to see women's basketball and they want to see it now.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, that's where we're going.
I'm glad you brought up March Madness because we're going to get to our conversation with Grant Hill. And I know it's going to come up because he played 4 years at Duke. The college game for both the men and the women is largely going to inform what the pro leagues look like. And NIL is different. All of it's really different. So I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think it's like the perfect time right now, especially when you're thinking of the business of basketball. They're building themselves as stars in college and they're able to profit off of it. So one, you'll see less people going broke by the time they're in their 20s. You'll see bigger stars. You'll see bigger fans. People are going to carry with them for a long time. Paige Buckers has been, you know, famous since she was in high school, really. But people followed her at UConn and they were like, she's not in the WNBA yet now. So it's like when she gets there, hopefully in 2024, when she gets there, there'll be other teams for her to join and it'll be really exciting time.
Very interesting moment of inflection all around the world of basketball. So let's turn to a guy who knows a lot about that in my interview with Grant Hill. So Grant, it's really nice to see you. Congratulations on the book. It's called Game. We're going to talk about that at length, but I want to start by asking you about the state of basketball. I mean, you see it from all different perspectives as a former player, as the head of USA Basketball, as an owner of a team. How would you describe it, the business of basketball right now?
I think it's as exciting as ever. The game is global. We're spreading our wings all over the globe. Africa, the NBA Africa was just unleashed last year. I think now we're in the midst of an exciting playoffs. We didn't have a LeBron James like we've used to having in the playoffs, but we still have had great excitement. I think the ratings game one was as high as it's been in the last 4 years. We've seen an introduction of, you know, new young talent emerge in our game. And so leadership from the league offices, I think we have incredibly successful and engaged owners in our league now. I think, you know, the diversity, we have, I think half of our coaches now are African American. Like, it's just, we're the most progressive sports league, I think, in the United States. And we're continuing to grow our business and grow interest all over the world. So I think we're, as someone who's been around it and involved in different roles since 1994, it's hard to believe it's been that long. I'm really excited about where we are and also what's in store as we move forward into the future.
We're going to go backwards in time a little bit, but take me back to coming into the league in 94, because it was a different league then. It was at a... in some ways, a similar moment of inflection. You know, you had some stars of the 80s and early 90s sort of rolling off, as it were. You came in with a class of really exciting players. What was different about then versus now?
Well, first of all, the 80s was an important a decade for the league. Magic, Larry Bird, Lakers, Celtics. You couldn't script those rivalries and those championships they won. And I think we really, the league built itself. David Stern, a sports marketing genius. I think cable television was starting to emerge. Like, everything was sort of starting to happen. Then this guy named Jordan, you know, emerged in the late 80s, early 90s. The Dream Team, you know, now you're growing and sort of showcasing these talented players all over the globe. So all this was happening prior. Tremendous amount of momentum during that, you know, 15-year stretch, the growth of the league and the success and popularity. And then in comes this, you know, this kid from Duke with a bad haircut. And I emerge at a time where things were just taking off. It was reflected in player contracts, marketing deals, opportunities, which I was able to benefit from. So I came in at a really important time. There was also a bit of a void. That was Jordan's first retirement. Who was going to next carry that mantle? I kind of benefited that from that maybe a little bit, maybe a little prematurely. I wasn't quite ready for that kind of responsibility. But yeah, I mean, it felt like we were at an all-time high. And to think in the last 25 plus years, like we've taken it to a whole nother level. Now, this was before social media. This was before really even the internet. And so it was a magical time. And I think a lot of times we kind of refer to that era as sort of the golden era, the mid-80s to the mid-90s was an important time frame, I believe, for the growth and the success of our league.
Yeah. And so let's go not all the way back, but pretty far back to actually, I'm going to go all the way back to your birth, because one of the things I learned in your book that you've talked a little bit about before was how you got your name, which is not a typical story. And also, I think illustrates a lot about sort of where you came from and sort of what was very formative for you in terms of your parents and their background.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, my dad played for the Cowboys, and Roger Staubach was obviously his teammate, was in my parents' wedding. So our families were very close. In anticipation of my arrival, my parents had picked out girls' names, and I think they assumed why and how, I don't know, but they assumed I would be a girl. And obviously I wasn't. And anyone who knows my father, it takes him forever to make a decision. And so for 2 or 3 days, I'm in Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and my name is Baby Boy Hill. And so Roger Staubach comes to visit, you know, the baby and mom and family, and is determined to give the baby, me, a name. And so we took my paternal grandmother, and her maiden name is Grant. And so... and my dad's middle name is Grant. So sort of keeping it in the family, honoring, you know, my parents' family, my dad's family. And so I'm grateful. I might have been able to leverage Baby Boy Hill later.
Yeah.
As an athlete, that could right. have had a nice
athlete,
ring to it.
Athlete, entertainer, like yeah, whatever. You know? I mean,
there's a lot of babies now in entertainment.
Totally.
And so I might have been ahead of my time. But like a good Hall of Fame iconic quarterback, he came in, took charge of the huddle, or in this case, the hospital room, and gave me my name. And as a football fan growing up in the late 70s, early 80s in Washington, D.C., that was my claim to fame as a Cowboy fan, to be able to brag in elementary school that Roger Staubach named me.
Yeah, I mean, that weird flex, but okay, as the kids say, right? And so let's talk about your parents, maybe from a slightly different perspective, given that we are here at Bloomberg, which is your business sense, the decisions that you make over time about your career, your education, and even your subsequent jobs clearly are rooted in their guidance in many ways, and sort of the template they set. One of the things that you talk about in the book, which I found so interesting, is this notion that your parents' success initially was actually unhelpful to you in from a credibility perspective on the court. I mean, I'm overstating it, but tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm an only child of two only children. So we were and we are very close. And I think they were constantly trying to just use whatever, you know, whatever they experience in their careers, in business and in sport, to teach me and lessons learned. And so, you know, little did I know that would help me later on as I entered the business of sport in a number of different ways. But they were achievers. They were successful. And I was cognizant and aware of that. And a lot of my peers from different ethnicities, didn't have parents who were my mom and dad. And so I was always aware of that. At times it was intimidating, and I struggled with confidence. I think sometimes those were such big shoes to fill and felt overwhelming during my young years. But in basketball, like, that doesn't help you, you know? And sometimes people, that could be a hindrance, you know? And the perception of a, you know, of a dad who was a professional athlete. Everyone's coming after you. Everyone thinks you can't play. And so, you know, I kind of, you know, use that to my advantage. And you know, perception, steroids, whatever was there, you could feel it sometimes. But, you know, the one thing in sports, I say it's the ultimate meritocracy, first of all. And as a parent of girls who are jocks, there's nothing I can do in terms of money, resources, whatever, that can make them be successful. They have to go out and earn it. And I was so driven when I was their age and I was young to earn whatever came my way on the playing field, or in this case, on the basketball court. And so my parents' success, that was great, had great advantages, great exposure, great education, lessons learned, still learning to this day. But that doesn't help you when you're on the court and you're at the playground or you're trying to establish yourself. And so I was determined to, like, carve out my own lane and to do my own thing. And in part, maybe why I didn't play football, which was my first love. Now, also, my dad wouldn't let me play until I got to high school. But basketball, like, was a chance for me to achieve and a chance to prove that I could do well.
Yeah. Well, it also, and this could be the subject of an entirely other podcast of, you know, me opining the fact about the fact that, or bemoaning the fact that you didn't end up at Georgetown and you ended up at Duke, but we won't deal with that. But let's talk about Duke for a second, because there are a couple things that are notable about your career there that set you up for where you are today. One is obviously Coach K, and you write a lot about him in the book, and I've seen you with him on stage, and clearly that bond is incredibly deep and meaningful. But you're also of a generation that went to school for 4 years and graduated. And that's not the NBA, or that's not the NCAA and NBA that we're in right now. How do you look back on that decision and then the state of basketball today, of which you have a really important stake in USA Basketball and as an owner of a team?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think that, you know, players, you know, majority stayed in school all 4 years, and a totally different time. And it wasn't even an option. Like, it wasn't something that I mean, there were some examples of players, Magic Johnson after 2 years, and certain guys, that Michael Jordan was there for 3 years at North Carolina. But for the most part, you stayed in school. And I had fun. Like, I would have stayed another year. Like, I had so much fun as a student athlete. But, you know, things have changed. And I think, first of all, the 4 years that I was there, we did some amazing things. But there's a connection that I have with that school, and I had with my alma mater, and other players of that era, I think, had with their school. The alumni, the school, the administration, the faculty, like, everybody got to know you. They got to follow your journey. And that emotional connection that we have with you have with Georgetown, you know, you get a chance to be and watch that. When guys now are only there for 1 year, you don't really get a chance to know them and connect with them and feel like they're one of ours, or we're one, you know, we're all in this together. And so I think it's impacted intercollegiate sports and, you know, college basketball. The NBA, I mean, we've been younger. We've become a younger league in the last 20 years. I think we've adapted to that trend. When players like Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, Tracy McGrady skipped college and went right from high school into the NBA, when the league changed that rule to now a one and done, you had to go to college for 1 year. I don't think we had the resources to support young teenagers making that transition. Obviously, there were examples, Kobe, Garnett, T-Mac, they became Hall of Famers. They were legendary. But there were other examples of players who struggled. And so as you fast forward to present day, and I know with the Hawks, like, we have unlimited resources. We have people who help with player development on the court, off the court. And that transition from 1 year of college, 2 years of college, to now the responsibilities and the pressures and all of the potential pitfalls that are out there, we're able to support these players a lot. And I think that's universal across the board in the NBA. So the times have changed. We're younger. We draft more maybe on potential and what they potentially could become. They're pretty darn good, you know, and it's amazing to watch.
And from an economic perspective, you look at something like the changing rules around name, image, and likeness.
I mean,
everything, I'd say everything, but a lot of things seem to be changing around the life of a college and a pro athlete. What's the advice that you give, especially from a business perspective, having made that transition into the business world? What's the advice you give to those players coming through?
Well, a lot is happening. You know, intercollegiate athletics is rapidly evolving. And it's a little, it's exciting, but it's also a little scary. And just because we don't know what that's going to look like, even the NIL, it just seems like we've gone from one extreme to the next extreme. I think sometimes, look, I had an issue in college when I tried to buy my jersey in the bookstore. And because of the rules, the school couldn't give me a jersey. And I had to pay $120 for my own jersey. And like, to me, that still doesn't sit right with me. And not that they're making money off of me, but just the fact that I had to pay for my own jersey, like that, I didn't quite understand that. But now you have extremes amount of money that certain players, certain athletes are getting. And go ahead, get as much as you can. It just changes things a little bit. And now the innocence, now the relationship with the school, you know, you can almost be looked upon in some ways as an employee. And so you're not there at the ultimate. You haven't reached the destination yet of getting to the professional ranks. I hope that that doesn't hinder that process for some of these players and change the dynamics in the locker room. You know, one of the things when I went from being a college player to a pro player was now it's a business. Now, not everybody necessarily wants to see you succeed on your own team. And now you throw this money around in college and you sometimes can worry, will that be the case in the intercollegiate environment?
One of the other big changes that we've seen, you've seen it from multiple perspectives in current day, and you saw it coming through your career, is athlete empowerment. Speaking out politically, you write in your book about, I believe it was your mom's business partner, Cliff Alexander, and sort of learning about the civil rights movement from him, learning about art from, you know, all these characteristics, all this history, all this heritage that was candidly more in the background when you were coming up as a player. And you mentioned this in your book, the famous Jordan line about Republicans buy shoes too. Even in your transition, and I had forgotten about this until I read it in the book. You spoke at the Democratic National Convention. You know, you have become close with the Obamas, and as has your mom. You're much more politically outspoken, and players now take it even a step further, maybe with social media and whatnot. How do you interpret all of that, and what's the right sort of balance to take when it comes to activism and political activism for an athlete?
Well, if you look over, you know, the last 60 years and the role that athletes have taken as it relates to activism, you think of Bill Russell, Kareem, Muhammad Ali, our country at that time was obviously going through a lot and was in the midst of changing and transitioning. And so they were speaking to what they were experiencing, even as superstar athletes. A lot of people like to say my era in the 90s, we failed, but a lot was happening in sports. And first of all, the money that was being made was extreme. Also, the access to information was not like it is now. This young generation, I think the digital age that we're in, social media, the sharing and exchanging of what's happening, not just in your own backyard, what's happening all over the world. I knew it was a game changer. 2010, I think this was the right year. 2010, maybe, I don't know the exact date or exact year, but I had Twitter and we had, I guess, captured and ultimately, I think, killed Osama bin Laden. And I found out about it on Twitter. And I remember in that moment, and I was new to it and trying to understand it, but I told my wife, I said, wow, this is when years ago you would have Dan Rather or, you know, breaking news on major network. And here we are on Twitter finding out this information. And so to me, that was a sort of a change in a lot of ways. And so this generation who all they know is the internet, how to deal with social media. So they have the access. If I played in Detroit in the 90s and something happened not far away in Cincinnati, Ohio, I could dig for it and really look and research. But, you know, unless it was on the news or it was reported, you know, you really didn't know. You were kind of unaware. And so now this generation, I applaud them. I applaud our league for embracing athletes sticking out. And talking about issues, talking, being critical about the world we live in, being critical about our league, you know, being critical about everything. But, you know, you have to be willing to adapt and adjust over the years. And I think successful organizations, successful businesses, successful leaders, I think to have longevity are willing to do that. And I think our league accepts that, and our players live that and demonstrate that, and it's something we're proud of.
As we wrap up, it occurs to me, having read the book, you know, there are so many clear through lines, and in terms of your ambition, your motivation, tenacity, etc., through injury, all of those things, and there was a pretty clear like North Star throughout. You know, whether it was, you know, going to the right college, getting to the league, achieving the league, you write about going to the All-Star game, playing in the Olympic, things like that. What's your North Star as a businessman?
You know, I'm still trying to figure it out. I've been retired now since 2013, and I think sometimes in retirement you have to try a number of things to figure out what you like, what's your passion, what you're good at, maybe not good at. And I do think in the process of writing the book, I came to the realization that, you know, because you have to live in your past and you have to, you know, attack certain things that have happened throughout your life, or at least be willing to unpack them. And I do think that, and I've done a number of things and I'm grateful for them and I enjoy everything, but I think the void of not seeing my career all the way through and on this awesome trajectory early on, and then that being derailed. Yeah, I came back and I had fun and I, you know, appreciative and grateful for that. But not seeing it all the way through has given me this obsessive thirst and hungry to achieve. And I think the lesson and thing that I've learned here is that I can't say yes to everything. And I think at times I've tried to do everything and I've run myself ragged. And so I'm like taking inventory right now of my life and like, okay, I have a lot on my plate. And why? And why do I feel this urge to achieve? And I think a lot of it is not fully coming to terms with my career and some of the things that unfortunately happened during my career.
Yeah. So what do you do next? What do you do to solve that problem?
That's the next book. But I mean, I apply a lot of the values and principles that I learned from Coach K, that I learned throughout my basketball journey, in the next chapter, in the life I'm living now, and, you know, in ownership with the team and USA Basketball. Working with others, managing success, handling failure, sacrifice, like all these intrinsic these values that are necessary for success. I wholeheartedly believe they transfer and carry over into other aspects of life. That's why Coach K gets like $1 million to give a speech gets a lot of money to speak at a corporate event, because people are fascinated by team building and leadership. And we live it. Sports, there's immediate results for the whole world to see and judge and to critique. A lot of times in business, it's like sawing wood, and over time, you might get those results. But building team, collaborating with others, having a collective responsibility, that's all sports, team sports. And really, that's business as well. It's people.
That's life.
And talent.
Yeah. Grant Hill, so good to spend some time with you. The book is Game. Thanks. We'll be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find me on Twitter. Follow me at Jason Kelly News. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. The franchise is produced by Stacey Wong. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.